Welcome to the Aversion Podcast. I'm your host, Zainab Yate, and I'm the author of When Breastfeeding Sucks, What You Need to Know About Nursing Aversion and Agitation.
Oh, hey!
Hi!
Can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, this is the first time we're meeting live.
I know!
It seems a bit ridiculous because we really should have met before.
I know, it's weird.
Yeah, it's a little bit, yeah. Well, I basically said I wanted to have a live and chat with you because I know that you tandem fed.
Yeah.
And I assumed you got aversion.
Yes. Yeah, and I didn't even realise it was a thing until I spoke to you for the first time. I don't know if you know that or not, but I didn't even realise it was a thing.
Well, that's not uncommon. That's basically why I come and I just kind of harass people and say, do you know that sometimes breastfeeding triggers negative emotions and people hate it? Yeah. And they're just like, well, that happens to me, but I didn't know it was a thing. And I'll say, yeah, it's called aversion, and it's called nursing aversion or breastfeeding aversion and agitation. And they're just like, I don't think they completely say what they actually went through.
No.
Until somebody else says, yeah, mine was really harsh.
Yeah. And I did, I felt like a terrible parent. I thought, I thought I was the only one that had ever been through it. I had no idea it was a thing until I came across your Facebook page.
Yeah, it's really silent, actually. It's almost completely like dead until you find everyone that just basically says exactly what you were going through.
Yeah.
So did you get it only with two or with
I
one?
I didn't have it at all. It was only when I was pregnant with my second that I started to, I had these feelings, I think, of being out of control of my body. And I think it had a lot to, and then especially when my daughter was born, so my second was born, and my son suddenly seemed so big in comparison to my daughter. And he was a toddler at the time, he was about 2.5. And I felt like he was always all over me, he was clambering all over me, he was grabbing at my breast, and I felt like I was completely out of control of my body. And again, it was you who talked about these triggers, and I had never put the two things together, never had even imagined that it could be related to abuse or anything like that. But it was, I think it must have been the trigger of emotion of being out of control of my body and not having boundaries or space. And
so did you get it when you were pregnant or just when the baby was born? And like, obviously
both.
In the third trimester, because it changes for some women.
That's a good question. I think it was probably worse in the second trimester. I think that's when it was at its worst. But to be honest, I can't remember a great deal about it. In pregnancy wise, I just remember how bad it was after she was born. After my daughter.
Did you carry on feeding or?
I did, yeah, for as long as I could. I remember my mum telling me to grit my teeth and bear it. So that's what I did. And eventually he actually weaned of his own accord anyway. But even then afterwards, if he came near my breast, I still had the same aversion. And I thought, is this ever going to go away? If he was anywhere near me, or if he was like touching me here or here, even then I'd start to feel triggered again. It's completely gone now. Completely gone. I don't have any aversion to it at all now, but it was really, really bad. And I think probably the main cause of my postnatal depression, second time around.
Breastfeeding with aversion, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually really heartbreaking. It's really funny because you said, I carried on feeding for as long as I could. And it's like totally that, because most people are like, well, just wean. Why are you feeding if it's so bad for you? But it's never as easy as that.
It wasn't easy. No. He needed me, and he needed me more then than ever, because he had a new sister and he was navigating his way of being an older brother and being a sibling. Mm. So he needed me much more, and I knew that. So that's why I continued.
Triple guilt.
I know, I felt so guilty. So guilty. But we made it through, and it's just interesting.
hopeful thing, because you're talking about it retrospectively and you're being like, well, I sometimes can't remember when it exactly started. Also, I totally don't get triggered now when he touches. Right. Also, we made it through. But when you're going through it, you feel like literally it's the end of the world and you're not going to be able to make it through, and you've ruined your relationship with your child and X, Y,
Z. I honestly thought we'd never have a relationship.
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah, I think that when I first experienced it, I thought that I was going mad. I didn't tell anyone for almost a year. And the first person I told was my husband, because he had to do the nights. And I had to explain to him, like, you need to just take him now. Because the night times is just when I just couldn't cope. During the day, it was a bit easier. I used to just make sure I was around people. I can see my Agatha, a girl I used to do breastfeeding peer support work with, 3 times a week sometimes for 3 hours. Yeah, but she was stuck with me. And I remember a lot having aversion then. But it's just different. If other people are around, you can really distract yourself and you can also distract your kid. But when you're at night, it's, you can't go anywhere. The flight
was
quite
your response. First? Was this your first? Yeah,
with my second, actually, if I'm honest, my husband had to step in at night, but slightly later.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, I didn't tell anyone. And also, I just had so many questions, like, still questions actually not answered today about breasts and things like that. And that's why I had to just write about it, because I didn't understand aversion. I do a lot more now. Hey, Agatha.
Hi.
So yeah, there's some answered questions or theories about it, especially like the flight or fight response, like basically being triggered and being like super stressed, and then the stress comes out as anger. It's basically negative emotions that come out as anger. So that flight response is actually oxytocin. It can be oxytocin.
Really?
Okay.
That's interesting.
And so every time you're breastfeeding with oxytocin, you're getting the negative association, flight response, instead of the...
You always think it's the sleepy love hormone, don't you? So it's interesting to hear them. that's what they refer to it as. So it's interesting to...
Yeah, well, I wanted to just say bollocks for some people, sorry. It really is complete rubbish for some people. Yeah. I mean, I don't know when it changed for me. Obviously, you can have sex and oxytocin is released. You can have hugs and oxytocin is released. And I never, I don't think I felt those things. But repeated letdowns and repeated activity where you're basically stressed and tense, or you don't have your body autonomy, and you can't go anywhere. And maybe that repeatedly over a few months in the beginning and then years, maybe that kind of associated oxytocin with... That's what I thought, with a sort of negative stress response, because
it makes so much sense. I almost feel emotional hearing you say it, because it relieves me of a lot of, you know, negative emotions that I felt in those early months, I think. And when you explain it like that, and it helps you understand.
Yeah, I know, it's definitely biological for some women.
Yeah.
Like completely. There's some No, some people, they start getting aversion on the day, it's essentially the day, and then every month after they get their postpartum menses back. Because their postpartum menses have come back, their hormonal thing is changing, their nipple sensitivity. You know, basically, if you get PMT and everything's a bit shit, maybe you've got your menses back. And everyone, I mean, like everything else with breastfeeding, you get a blanket statement like, oh, no, you don't get your period back for like 2 years. It's just not true for so many people. So it's definitely biological for some women. And when they app track their periods, they can like plot it. They can plot when they get their aversion. Oh, and yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's like it makes it a little bit easier to cope with, but it's also still really, really hard.
And mine did. So even though it went away and I didn't have it quite so much with my daughter, my second born, it did used to start to rear its head during my menstrual cycle. I can't remember at what point, but I always knew that I was about to, get my period, because she would be, I would start to feel the those negative feelings again. So
it's interesting. Well, it's really hard. I just had just leading up to today, I was having my period. I knew it was happening, but I still felt like the world was going to shit. And I've felt really like kind of low and agitated anyway. And I just thought, God, if I was breastfeeding, like, poor them, because you can't, no one can touch me, like, get off me. But you can't, is something that, because breastfeeding and mothering and stuff is not really that important in the overall scheme of the population and the world and things like that, they don't realise that mothers really struggle with that, because you can't just decide to, okay, well, I've got my periods, the next 5 days or the 3 days that it's bad, I'm going to stop breastfeeding. Yeah. And then when it's gone, I'm just going to pick up and carry on again, because that's, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's really super sore and they're super big, or you just don't want to be tight. It makes a lot of sense, but you can't. And also you can't
explain.
And you can't explain that to a one-year-old, because they won't.
And the other thing that I found, the more that I fought it, the more he'd want it. So I think there was part of me that thought he almost knew that I was having these feelings, because it would make him want me more, because the more I was pushing him away. And it feels awful saying that out loud, but looking back, I definitely think that the more I was trying to push away, the more he was, you know, the more he was wanting it.
Well, so I didn't at the time understand that was happening, but when mothers like messaged me saying, you know, this happens and then this happens and then I have to keep giving boob afterwards because they're upset, I began to see the cycle, and basically aversion can become a vicious negative cycle because of that thing that you just mentioned, where you might not even notice it, but as you're pushing them away, your body language is tense, your, what they call, your social nervous system is offline. So you're not engaging with them socially. They can tell straight away, because they're not, you're, their inbuilt survival instinct is to tap into people's online social nervous system. Yeah. You know, eye triggers, body motions, things that teach them that they're safe, that they're open, that they can like connect with you and things like that. But when you get negative emotions, you, or the flight response, stress response, your social nervous system will go off, because you're panicking, you'll look to see if there's anyone around and you're basically tensing up and all of that stuff. For them, they probably don't even know it. How they'll react is to be like, go back to source. Let's go back to the mum. Let's just feel calm again. And for boobing mums, that's basically go back to boob.
Yeah.
And it's like what they call it, catch 22. It's awful. You feel like you can't win, and then
it's,
you can't.
Yeah.
It's and then when you realise it's happening, like I noticed loads of mums, they would delatch quite like loudly, or they're effing and blinding because they're so touched out, and then that also causes it. So how you react and how you delatch when you get your aversion can make the cycle worse, but you, at the time you don't know it, like,
because they're
the time,
fighting then to go back on.
It's a really tricky imbalance, and when it is imbalanced, it just repeats itself like in a loop. Yeah. Because, you know, that's what you do. You boob to bed, you boob when they're upset, you boob because you feel guilty, or because the younger one needs you. If your breast is out, they're gonna
go for,
they're
it,
gonna be there. Yeah.
I remember it well.
Yeah, I don't think you can ever forget it. I just got a bit of breast milk jewelry because I can probably reach it if you can hold it a fork.
Yeah.
But because I felt like I can't let go of what happened. I need to have some kind of healing. I don't know if anybody else has had that. Like, I'll get my, I'm low on spoons today, so I'm not walking, but I'll get my, I'll leave you in the good hands of Kate.
I'm not gonna say anything. I'm just gonna wait for you.
Well, you're pretty capable. You say so much.
Oh, it's all written. So speaking is not my forte.
Really?
God, you've never been able to tell. What do you mean? You seem like a natural.
So when I start talking, I just don't shut up. I'm a babbler.
Oh, wow. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
They're there. It's really pretty.
Oh, wow. Where's that from? I know.
Eternally cherished, a lady called Erin. I was super para because I could never express. I was super para about losing this tiny bit of milk I had.
Yeah.
And also, I know from what I knew, you can't really make breast milk jewellery unless you have like 5 mil or 10 mil. I could never express that amount, so I had less than 2 mil. And she made it.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's not exactly what I wanted, but that represents my breastfeeding journey. It's not exactly what I wanted, but...
Well, you'll have to send me the details. I'd love to...
Are you still...
No, we're done now. We're done.
So do you have some somewhere?
Yeah, I've got some somewhere left over, I imagine, in the freezer. But yeah, I never was able to express much either. But she's not stopped. She only very recently stopped. So it's
you'll still have some.
Yeah, I'm sure I've got some somewhere. Yeah.
I remember it was like 4 or 5 months after I'd had the last feed, which was really slow. My weaning process was slow. It was 4 or 5 months after, and I'd come back from America because I'd talked at a conference. I came back from America, and then I saw them, and then I had a shower. And then a little bit came out. I was like, what the hell?
I actually still do milk a bit now.
Yeah, so I was pretty
still some left.
It's so strange that it can just... Oh, thanks, Claire. No, it's really beautiful. To be honest, there's loads of really pretty rings available now. It's just, you know, you have your own preferences, don't you? About what you like and... You're gonna pay for it, you might as well love what it is. But yeah, I was gonna show you my bullet journaling thing, which is basically immense right now. But it's a tracker. So that's what I started to do with a version. It's just a bullet journal. Do you know those things where you like
not really, no, you'll have to.
Oh, bullet journals, they're like you just put quotes and there's like a thing where you put your tasks that you need to do and something that's important, and then you have like a monthly tracker.
I'm honestly the most disorganized human being on the planet.
Well, you're looking at a reformed disorganized person because I was really I think I did it because everyone around me was starting to suffer.
We're at that point now. We're at that point where people are starting to suffer and people are getting frustrated.
Yeah, there isn't sometimes we run out of milk, completely run out of milk, run out of eggs, things like that. It was just getting I started to do it because of things like understanding aversion. Essentially I'd write it down on bits of paper every time I got something out. And then I tried to see patterns, and then I realized it's just too difficult to, I need it in one place.
Yeah.
So I started to do that, and then you can begin to realize your triggers. I'm not saying you can stop them, because sometimes it's just a biological response. Like if you've been a survivor, if you're a survivor of sexual abuse or childhood trauma or childhood abuse, childhood neglect, things like that, then actually you have a super oversensitive, you go from 1 to 10 in the stress response, basically instantly. Whereas other people, they might go 1 to a normal stress response.
Yeah.
But then it's easier for them to come back down. Whereas if you have a heightened stress response state, you'll go from 1 to 10, and then bringing yourself back down is like near impossible by yourself.
Yeah. I've had it the last week actually, and I found it really hard to bring myself back down again.
Yeah, it's super hard. There's a book, I'll send you the link. There's a book about how animals, basically because we're mammals, we're going to get the same stress response in a sense, but mammals in a way, like if they kind of get eaten or tried to get eaten, they'll have that fight or flight response and then they shake it out.
Yes.
So they will never retain, they'll never retain the state for very long. Whereas we don't tend to do that, or we're not taught to do that. Like my friend was just telling me, like you either have to just like maybe go on a quick 5 minute rave or scream into the pit. I don't know.
I was going to say exercise. That's something that helps me a lot, actually.
But you'd have to jump into it there and then, like,
oh,
a punching bag to get rid of all of the.
Yeah, that's doable.
Get a punching bag.
Yeah, why not?
No, yeah. I wish I could. I would get really lazy when I'm not lazy, just like apathetic after I get that response, because I get all guilty and I'm just like, oh, what's the effing point?
It's tiring.
I messed
as well.
Up again. Yeah, it's exhausting.
It's like anxiety and things like that. I find, so today I'm exhausted because it's the second day, I think, where I felt okay again after a week.
Oh, you're recovering.
And so I'm recovering, and like today I've just been, complete brain's not been working properly. I feel okay, but I'm knackered. So hopefully tomorrow I'll be starting to
if you can sleep well
back up in, if I can sleep well. Yeah, I slept all night last night until 7 o'clock this morning. That's so unusual for me.
You normally get up early, don't you?
I'm an early riser, like 5 o'clock I'm normally up.
I nearly spat out my tea when I woke up. I want to be like you.
See, this is now. What time is it now? This is past my bedtime.
This is when you're going to bed. So what do you do? Talk me through it. You eat at like 6 and then get into bed between 7 and 7:30.
I eat with the kids at about 5:30. And then I get into, and then I put them to bed about 7, watch TV for an hour, go to bed at 8, read, and then I'm normally asleep by 8:30, 9.
Really? Well, I guess if you're in the habit of it, I think I just get depressed
it's
thinking about it.
But such a habit now. Such a habit that...
That's not a bad thing at all. In fact, I think everyone, unless you're like genetically a night owl, it's supposed to be good for everyone to do that. Like, you know, staying awake all night, watching endless Netflix and stressing out on social media is not good for anyone.
No. And that's why I've started, you know, I read so much longer now than I do watch TV. So it helps me sleep so much better.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We know anyway.
Yeah, one thing is to know it and another thing is to do
to actually practice. Yeah, I know.
Sarah Neverson says, I've heard that it's common with people who have had sexual trauma or similar. How common is it for people who haven't had any trauma in the past?
So basically, if we're going to go strictly research speaking, like, so anyone's going to quote me, we don't know how common it is. In my book, I'll talk about different groups of people that find aversion happening and the reasons why, but that's just my theory. So in public health we'll call it prevalence, the prevalence model. So that'd be looking, calculating how many breastfeeding women get breastfeeding or nursing aversion and agitation. That would be something that looked at how common it occurred in breastfeeding women, and they haven't done that. They just published a paper about dysphoric milk ejection reflex. And it's really low prevalence, like you could expect. I think it's either 2.1 or 9.1. Don't quote me, but you can look it up. But for aversion, there's nothing. So there's like 3 or 4 groups of women. The first is those that have persistent pain or discomfort. And that's like basically tongue tie, Raynaud's. Like it's just always painful and uncomfortable to feed. Even though it shouldn't be, it just always is. Those women can get aversion. Women who are pregnant, like you, are pregnant and breastfeeding. And then women who are survivors, either of childhood trauma or sexual abuse, or unfortunately both. And then there is another pregnant and tandem feeding, so 2 or more feeding multiples. So it's those 4 groups. So that's it seems to be common in those kind of risk factor groups, and also people who are they have gender dysphoria or they identify differently because of body dysphoria. So basically they've tried to hide their breasts, or and then breastfeeding is obviously quite triggering for them because of all the things that happen around their body. So it's those 5 groups essentially, but there's so much needs to be done about it. We don't know how common it is. But obviously, if you join, like I help admin breastfeeding older babies and beyond, because you need to normalize it. You need to feel like you're all right and normal.
it's pretty common in there for people to get aversion. So
I see it in there all. I'm a member of that group, and I see it in there all the time.
Yeah,
it seems older so and people, all of these mums, and they write and they say, "I feel so guilty, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong, and I don't know how can I change it." And I just, my heart breaks for them because I know exactly what they're going through.
It is heartbreaking. I mean, it was heartbreaking. It broke my heart repeatedly. I used to pray, like literally, I would be praying because I'm Muslim, and I would pray that I didn't get it with my daughter. It was the worst thing I've experienced in my life. And I've had like major surgical operations, been through loads of pain. I mean, the birth was pretty horrific for the first one, but I thought aversion was just the worst thing. Yeah. You're just stuck between a rock and a hard place and you can't win, and it's heartbreaking. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe now they're going to do a bit more research on it, but you need quite a lot of money to do. I mean, you won't need money to find out how many women it affects. It just needs someone pretty skilled. And, you know, if I didn't have kids, I would have changed my PhD to look at it. I would have done. And that's what it needs to find the prevalence. But to find something that specifically helps, that will need like thousands of pounds for a clinical trial or something, you know, just to figure out what helps for what women, because you know you can get oxytocin sprays and stuff that they have. You can, but well, they have like a clinical application in some other medical conditions, but it doesn't rule out that it wouldn't be possible to use. And some breastfeeding mothers do use it, I think, in the States, but it does have like negative effects. So they need to kind of tweak how it's used. So, but it, you know, magnesium,
Say that was the one thing that kept popping up for me, people telling me to use magnesium.
Yeah, the thing is that metadata, so within the group of aversion people around the world who chat and stuff, it has helped, like it seems to help so many women, but I would hazard a guess it didn't help with you if you tried it.
No, it didn't help me.
Right, and the reason I'm saying that is because as you've openly spoken about, you're a survivor. So I knew straight away that if you took magnesium to help with your aversion, it would do jack squiddly dot. Like,
I knew
why it didn't help me. It didn't help me because I still do have these super sensitive nipples. Like post lactation, my nipples are like basically do not touch me on my nipples ever. Like,
really? Okay, I'll remember that when I meet you for the first time. No, what, you... I'm put that's in my brain now. Don't touch her nipples. Damn it. It's gonna be the first thing.
All right. No, but seriously, I knew why it didn't help me. So okay. But for other women it does. So if it's something to do with your depletion of your, because like it takes so much energy to make milk, even though we can do it in our sleep, it doesn't mean it's not taking up energy. For those women that it's a kind of a sign that their body is like, just give me more nutrients, give me more fluids, because it can be. Some women I know, when they like, they start to chug that down at night when they've got aversion, and it disappears, it just goes.
Yeah.
Like they just need water and their aversion is gone, because they're basically, their body's getting super agitated and it's saying, you need to give me fluids right now. Yeah. I'm in the survivor category. So Claire's saying, I'm in the survivor category and I get the aversion on and off with my 2-year-old girly. What did you find help whilst feeding to not want to unlatch and walk off? What did you do?
So I was in therapy for a little while in my 20s to deal with my past, my trauma. And I remember the one thing that she always helped me with was to find a happy place. If I was ever having, you know, sit with your thoughts, if you're having negative thoughts, sit with them for a couple of minutes and then send yourself to your happy place. And I remember doing the same thing with my son. I'd close my eyes and just try and move, like put my brain, so it's almost like a meditation, I suppose, to try and remove the thoughts from my brain and put myself in a happy place, just try and relax every muscle in my body and sit there and just carry on, I guess. That's the best way that I could describe it. And we ended up actually setting boundaries and things as well, which inevitably led to him weaning. A slow process, like you were talking about, we'd do counting to 10, for example, and then he'd have to unlatch, or I'd offer hugs instead of boob. So if he came and asked for boob, I'd say, should we have a hug instead? And then sometimes he'd say, no, I want boob, in which case I'd give him boob. But many of the times he was more than happy with a hug. So that's how he gradually ended up weaning. I don't know if you were actually asking about weaning, but it helped, definitely helped put boundaries in place.
So the times you did like the, I guess you'd call it meditative, to get to your happy place, how many times did that work? So like, did it work every time or? No. Yeah.
Sometimes you get so wound up, but it did sometimes help. You know, just relax. You have to think of things like relax your jaw. Cause you know, you're talking about tensing. So everything's tense, your jaw's tense, you're grinding your teeth, you're stressed. So it would just help to relax every muscle in your body and sit there and you know, it helps sometimes, but not always, that's for sure.
Yeah, I did wonder about that. I did, sometimes you, those positive affirmation kind of YouTube things help mums. Sometimes like mums with them, they get a version and they also know that they're on the autism spectrum or they're autistic, things like that. They actually literally have a setup where they'll have headphones, what are those things called, like a sensory thing. So basically something literally to engage their senses. Because all the touching and the pinching and the nipple flutter, sucking, all that stuff can be triggering, right, to some people who are sensitive. Yeah. So they'd have a setup every time they boobed, where actually, you know, in the group, so Claire, it depends how severe your aversion is, but some, it could possibly be classed as self-harm, but some women basically will bite down on their...
I used to do that. I'd scratch my...
Pinch their thighs like super hard. Sometimes it draws blood because you don't notice how much you're trying to distract yourself. It's called the gate control method. I mean, it's not, that's what the pain world terms it. So basically the gate control method of pain or discomfort, where you make a really strong sensation elsewhere to control your cognitive brain's focus on it, and it's really powerful because then obviously you can stay feeding if you're like hating it every second of it. But I don't know, it basically is a
distraction's a huge one though, isn't it, as well, if you can. But you talking about how yours was most prevalent at night time, your aversion, so you can't really distract at that point, but in the day distraction helps a lot, doesn't it, I suppose, with...
Yeah, at nighttime too, it's worse for people because if you have flashbacks or if you're triggered, the fact that you're in a dark room reinforces the fact that you can't get away, if that makes sense. So your subconscious is feeling also a bit trapped as well. Again, because we don't have the research, I do talk about it a bit in my book, so it is like published, but... nocturnal adrenaline is really powerful, and that's what will happen. You'll get a rush of nocturnal adrenaline if you're feeling like that. So it's a stress response that's quite strong, so you get the cortisol, and that can lead to the negative emotions and things like that. So trying to temper that, it isn't all gloom and doom, it can work. You know, on the worst parts of it, I would actually, my husband would either sling them to sleep because they were still boob to sleep associated, which is not normal for breastfed babies and toddlers. They go to sleep with the breast. So on the worst times, it would either be sling to sleep. He would just walk up and down the dark living room. Or if I couldn't get his help because I can't carry them because of my leg, I would have like a little home wheeled pushchair. It's just a pushchair for the home to get them to nap in the day and also at night time. But so just
like
what
rock them.
Yeah, because movement, right?
Yeah. I know, I still jiggle even now if I'm stood still. I can't, it's such a natural thing, isn't it?
Rock. Yeah, they're so lucky. It's like going in a hammock every night.
I know, yeah.
Patting their bum and moving.
I could do with it, someone doing that to me every night occasionally as well, yeah.
I did promise that we were gonna, I don't know where I put my crap, but I did say I was gonna give away basically. I put it somewhere, and now I'm so disorganized. I'll give away a book, and I can post someone like a tote.
Where is
the tote with that picture on it? If anyone wants that, you can just comment or tag someone you think would like it, and I don't mind. So I just wanted to come on and talk to you about it, because you're like a normal human being that's really glued on, and you're not completely insane, and everybody loves your posts, and you know, you got a version, and it's just what happens to some women.
I definitely think more people need to talk about it and be open about it.
Yeah, it might find some random like secret method that someone uses that works for everyone as well, because at the moment, if we don't talk about it. Oh, hi, Emma. I love it when IBCLCs join, because I'm just like, oh, lactation consultants.
Yay.
You take this to the world. You help women. whereas me and my piddly little thing, not so much. Yeah. So I'm going to, I mean, I can talk all night, but you go to bed early. So I'm happy to wrap it up. Basically, I can talk whenever you want, so we don't have to.
It was lovely to do this. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
it's interesting to learn a little bit more. I actually need to buy your book.
Oh, I'll just send you one. You don't need to buy it.
I mean, that would be lovely. Of course, I'll buy it. I know what it's like for authors.
Oh, well, if any, I mean, yeah, you don't make it to get rich. Like, I did it because I was going mad and I needed answers. But I think a lot of people do think it's a money maker, but it's like, so not. You get like a pound a book, if that. So it's not. But they are much more important than the money, because they give you validation and they give you understanding. I didn't know you read so much, so I definitely.
I read a lot.
Yeah. You can. You might like it. You might like it.
I'll give a little review.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you could. You've got a name in the wall, haven't you? You're like famous. I didn't think of that. Yeah, I should send you one. But anyway, I'm definitely going to give one away.
And a hoodie as well. I'm going to share this live on my page as well, so that other people can see it.
Isn't it already going live on your page? I'm pretty sure. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So we're going to let you sleep. Aisha Peel, where can I get the book? Oh, God. Oh, if you need to start with a version, I'll put a link in there, the podcast, because I know tired mums. I just go through bits of what a version is on a podcast. They're just short 10-minute things. I'll put a link in there. You can listen to it straight away. But the book is just, you know, it's on Pinter and Martin or on Amazon. Or if you hate Amazon, like loads of people do, you can just get it on the Book Depository. That's got free worldwide delivery. So thank you so much. And
thank you very much for having me.
If you ever want to talk, we can again. So yeah, thanks everyone for joining, and we'll let you sleep, Kate. Bye.
Bye.